Let's proceed with our meeting. I'm caught in between two meetings this morning and afternoon. As a result, I will open the meeting and then request the whip to continue with the meeting on my behalf. While I attend to the other business, we would want to would like to welcome the AG's office this morning. I must indicate also that as the management, we did get a briefing from the AG's office. That briefing is usually given to chairpersons, but then I extended that to the management so that we could engage the AG together, and hoping that would assist us in planning the work of this committee. This briefing is very important. As you all know, that budget is one of the tools that portfolio committees use for their oversight work. It is an enabler, because without clear understanding of the outcome pertaining to the performance of the department or the outputs, because outcomes is something else, it talks to the exact work. In this case, it's concerning what the departments manage to do with their finances that we, on an annual basis, allocate to those departments. In this case, our department, that is the EDD, and the entities under the EDD, it will be important that we pay specific attention to the areas that need a lot of attention, as we'll hear from the ages, from the presenters, that in some ways there has been a bit of a regret in the performance of our entities and to some extent to our department. So I will then, without a waste of time, because the gentlemen and two ladies we're seeing here today, we've seen them for the first time, and it will be important that they know who's in attendance from our side before they take over and are able to then also introduce themselves to us. I must start with the honorable gentleman there at the back. Mr. Cele is the whip of the committee. And then just in front of him is Dr. Kado, representing the Democratic Alliance in the committee. And then in front of him is Mr. Liane, also a member of the management representing the ANC. Next to him is Mayor Matsimbi, a member of the management committee also representing the African National Congress. And then, myself, Mayor Matulari Coleman, the chair of the committee. Next to me here is part of our support staff, the secretary of the committee, Peter Paul Mbele. And then just next to you, there is our researcher, Nobisa Mbelekan. And then we have my PA there at the back, Venetia Williams. Next to her is the committee assistant, Tabiso Letake. Tabiso Ntswarele. memory ya ka e dumelane le wena ke tsebe go why. All the time at once go pula senemi ya hao ke a hana. O intshwarele. It's okay letlhale. I think you'll know the rep from the department is the parliamentary liaison officer for the deputy minister. I think we all yes, that's all what we have. And we have other members who are not here whom I'm told they've apologized. So and one member who's going to join us later. This is a briefing session, we don't need a quorum. Therefore we will continue as we are. May I, without further waste of time, hand over to yourself.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Andries Segeto, as told to Chairman earlier on. I was the senior manager responsible for the audit of the economic development and some of the entities within the portfolio. So, Chairperson, to allay your fears, although we are meeting for the first time, or the faces being here for the first time, I actually took over the portfolio from Mr. Ahmed Mulla already sometime last year. It just so unfortunately happened that during the previous briefing sessions that I was on leave, especially the one in March when they came and they saw you with regard to the APP, and sometime in September when they came to see you regarding the in-committee briefing, I was busy with assisting the office with some other strategic intent. So it's not that we are entirely unfamiliar with the portfolio. Just to allay your fears, we are well versed with the topic that we are coming to present. It's just that I'm attending for the first time. My colleague on my left-hand side, Ms. Jacoba Thrampela, will be taking the portfolio in the interim, as I've been quite fortunate to have gotten a promotion within the office. So in the interim, at least now she's here and you'll see the face, and hopefully she'll engage with you going forward as well. Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, first and foremost, let me take this opportunity to thank you for availing yourselves to engage with us on this topic. As Chairperson has alluded to earlier on, it is quite an important session for yourselves to make certain important decisions with regard to your budget reviews. To make sure that the money that was spent is aligned to the expectations which you have set forth for your portfolio, and whether certain strategic decisions need to be taken as a result of the results which we'll present to you today. So without further ado, Chairperson, I'm going to start with the presentation. Our presentation is structured in such a way that we'll just give you feedback with regard to the financial audit outcomes, the performance information, and the compliance aspects of the portfolio, all of which are within our mandate. But Chairperson, before I get started, I would like to also mention that in some structures I still qualify as youth, so I tend to speak quite fast at times. If there's any uncertainties or unclarities at any given point in time, please feel free to stop us and ask a question. But preferably, we would like to run through the presentation and then take questions in the end. Chairperson, as far as the first slide, I think we'll start on slide 3. The slide just basically sets forth our reputation promise, basically what we do as an office of the AG, that we exist to strengthen our democracy through the audits that we do, thereby instilling public confidence ensuring that there's good governance and accountability and oversight in the public sector. As far as our role with specifically relating to this process, we are here to provide you with the oversight structure with some information and reflect on the work that we've performed with regard to the 15-16 financial year to enable you to make those informed decisions as alluded to earlier on. But obviously our briefing is quite confined to the mandate of the AG. Now, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, what is the mandate of the Office of the AG? We give you feedback in terms of three key areas of the portfolio. So basically, first and foremost, on slide number 4, were entities and the department within your portfolio able to fairly reflect and present what has happened in the financial accounts or in the financial records? So basically, if we look at the financial statements within the portfolio, does 1 + 2 = 3? Were they able to account for everything appropriately in their day-to-day activities? But obviously we are a government, and whenever we receive money and we spend money, we are obviously tasked to achieve certain goals and objectives. So in doing that also, the department and entities must be able to account and report accurately and correctly and reliably on the performance information. So what we do as Office of the AG, we also give you some form of feedback in the sense of how the entities have accurately and completely reported on the performance information. It's quite important to note that we do not give feedback in terms of the actual achievement of service delivery, but we just tell you how accurately they have reported in the annual performance report. So I'll give you an example. An entity could have 10 targets and they only achieved 2. If they accurately report that I've only achieved 2, we will say you've reported correctly because you've only achieved 2 targets. But we will elude and refer the user of the financial statement to the entity's performance report, where the user can then assess for themselves the status of the achievement of those targets of the portfolio. And then the third aspect, obviously, because we are guided and we are a law-abiding country, so we also have to give some form of feedback in terms of how well the entities and the department within the portfolio have observed the laws and the regulations in their day-to-day conduct. So first and foremost, were they able to account for everything from an accounting point of view, and did they adequately and completely and reliably report in terms of their performance, and ultimately in doing so, how well they have observed and complied with key legislation as required by, for example, the PFMA and the Constitution. Now, Chairperson, having mentioned those three areas, how we give you feedback on those three areas, we call them the outcomes or the opinions. As Office of the AG, we give 5 types of outcomes, and I'll just quickly give you some form of high level and remind yourselves, just a quick refresher course. I think you should have heard or seen this before sometime. The first outcome that we'll deal with is a clean audit. That is now the ideal audit, ideal state where ideally we would like all our entities to operate within or be able to account in such a manner. This is basically just saying that if we reflect back on the previous slide, an entity was able to account for everything 1 plus 2 equal 3 from a financial point of view, and they reported correctly and accurately in terms of their performance information, and they were also compliant and observed all key legislation with regard to compliance and with laws and regulations. So that's what we commonly refer to as a clean audit. Now, the other outcome that we have, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is where you get financially unqualified. So that is where an entity, from a financial point of view, were able to account for their records and accounts in a fair, presentable manner, 1 plus 2 equals 3, but maybe they were found wanting either in how accurately or completely they reported performance information, or maybe they had some issues or challenges with regard to compliance with laws and regulations, and their material findings with regard to non-compliance. Now, the next slide, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, is where ideally you do not want to be at any given point in time within the portfolio. There is now the modified audit outcomes where entities were not able to correctly account for their financial affairs and had findings on performance information and or compliance. The first one is a qualified outcome where an entity could have potentially or possibly not done well in one area. So we say if I look at your financial statements, you've got 10 items there, revenue, expenditure, you know, your assets, accruals, commitments. Maybe one of them you didn't fare so well and you were not able to correctly and completely account for that one area. So then you get a qualified audit outcome. And then the next one is adverse and disclaimers. The adverse is where there's material disagreements with what you have reported. So the entity would have reported something, but the AG does not agree with it from an audit point of view. And this disagreement is material and pervasive over the entire financial statements, and then we issue an adverse opinion. As far as the disclaimers are concerned, I think this is probably the worst one that an entity or a department could get, is where they have communicated or they've got the financial statements, but the financial statements are not supported by any supporting documentation. There's no evidence, there's no records management, so we are not able to express any view on those financial statements. And I think this is really where we don't want to be, but fortunately for us as a portfolio, we do not have any of the unwanted outcomes, if I can call them that. Now, as far as the actual outcomes are concerned for the portfolio, Chairperson, now this is the business end of things. And before I get started into the actual slide, I would like to explain how one should ideally interpret it. So, Chairperson, you'll note that if you look at slide, they are actually numbered somewhere there in the middle. There's a 1, 2, and a 3. Now, if you also bear in mind with slide number 3 that we said the Office of the AG gives you outcomes or feedback on financial statements, compliance, and performance information, you see the slide is set up for the entire portfolio over a three-year feedback period with regard to your financial statement, your trend with regard to compliance, and also your performance information. So, as far as the actual outcomes are concerned, fortunately, none of our entities within the portfolio got any modified, no qualifications, no audit outcomes that we, or opinions that we do not want. However, Chairperson, the key message here with regard to slide one is that, as you see, none of our entities have been successful in sustaining clean audit outcomes. So some of them have actually achieved clean audit outcomes. Just as a point of note, in 2012 and 13, it was the ITEC, so all of the entities within the portfolio have at some stage received a clean audit outcome, but they were not successful in sustaining it. Some of the key issues that, that entities should consider within the portfolio, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is just the lack of management being able to maintain a holistic view. So basically, management does very well at addressing the issues which are on the table now to make sure that we implement internal controls and corrective action to address those issues. But sometimes in doing that, you lose sight of other matters as well. So next year when the auditors come, they'll pick up a new issue, a new finding arises, and that sort of hampers us from moving to a clean audit outcome and all of the entities within the portfolio achieving clean audit outcomes. Now, Chairperson and Honourable Members, I think you'll agree that given the nature of the economic development portfolio, there's no complex accounting transactions, there's no complex matters that the portfolio deals with. So at least from an accounting point of view, an audit outcome point of view, there really aren't any big reasons why none of all of the entities cannot be clean at any given point in time. So there should be, really, management should focus on maintaining their holistic view so that they make sure that they have proper systems in place to make sure that they can, at any given point in time, have proper systems of internal control to allow for us to move towards clean audit outcomes. Now, why did we not get clean audit outcomes? Like I said, financially, yes, the 1 plus 2 equals 3, as evidenced by the yellow, but why is it not the green? You'll see it in the second and the third graphs there. The one is the compliance aspect. You'll see a regression in terms of the compliance, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, where none of the entities in the current financial year were successfully not having a significant finding with regard to compliance. So each one had, at some stage in the audit report, a significant finding with regard to non-compliance. The evils in the portfolio are twofold. The first one is the entities are struggling somewhat to maintain proper systems of financial discipline to produce accurate, reliable, and complete financial statements. What does that mean? That means that 31 May, when the auditors come and we ask the final set of financial statements for audit, we find material adjustments in the financial statements that they've submitted, and then they have to process those adjustments first for them to be financially unqualified. And that was the case with regard to EDD and ITEC, basically meaning if there wasn't that opportunity to fix, they would have been qualified. But because we allow adjustments, they were financially unqualified. But obviously we have to reflect that the systems were not operating effectively because the financial statements they submitted on 31 May were not a fair reflection because they had material adjustments. With regard to the Competition Commission and the Competition Tribunal, these entities had specific challenges with regard to non-compliance with supply chain management legislation, where deviations were approved, but when we actually scrutinized the deviations, we realized that the reasons and that they had put forth for the deviations were not really reasonable and justifiable given the context. And at Competition Commission, there was an issue with regard to a conflict that was not declared, and the deviation was approved without checking the conflict, and we picked up that a member who was given work actually had a conflict with an official of the commission, and that resulted in the irregular expenditure. So with regard to compliance, again, a regression as a result of a lack of systems with regard to financial statements, and maybe we should do away with not engaging in a lot of deviations because the reasons are found wanting. And just maybe of the topic, and just to give you an example, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, you'll note that some entities will come and say, if I decide to deviate, it is a management decision. I can do it as management. It is allowed in terms of the PFMA. But National Treasury says your reasons must be justifiable, they must be reasonable. In the cases of emergency or when you're a sole provider, there are a criteria that is stipulated by National Treasury. But just to give you an example of a pitfall that you can find yourself in, there was a case law in June where one of the social development entities, I think it's SASA, there was a case where they engaged in, they went through a fair process, they deviated, And when they deviated, the person who was supposed to win but didn't win, he took them to court. The court ruled in favor of the person, saying the deviation was not, when he looked at the reason, the deviation was not justifiable. So it just shows you that they cannot argue it's a management decision. It must, they must still be able to demonstrate that they've applied themselves, they've gone through the process, and really there was no other option than to deviate. Then we would have no problem with that. So, and as soon as one gets into the culture of deviations as well, you know, one must do away with that, because you'll find yourself always at risk of not complying. Then, Chairperson, the third area is our performance information. So in terms of our performance information, we give you feedback in terms of the quality of the performance plans. So remember when the Office of the AG talks performance information, we will always say, look at three criteria. Do you have a plan as required by the law? Is your plan, does it contain the minimum requirements as required by National Treasury template? And was it approved by the delegated authority, like the executive authority? That is a compliance aspect. Then over and above that, we'll say, now that you have a plan and you are compliant, let's look at how useful is this plan. So in other words, will the layman in the street be able to pick up your plan and understand exactly what it is that you are setting yourself out to achieve? Does it talk to your mandate? Is it relevant to your mandate in terms of these targets and indicators that you've crafted yourself? That is what we commonly refer to as the usefulness as the Office of the AG. We do that assessment. The last assessment we do is, now that you have a plan, it's understandable. Now let's look at the end of the cycle. How accurately are you reporting your performance in your APR? So that's where we look at the reliability of the performance information. So you'll see the third graph on the right-hand side gives you two graphs there over a three-year period. The one is the quality of the plan. The other one is the quality of the report, how they've reported. And in both instances, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member, you'll see there was a slight regression in a 50% regression with regard to the annual performance report. So in terms of the plan, we looked at the EDD's annual performance plan, and from what was contained within the annual performance plan, we were not entirely convinced that some of the targets, we understood exactly what it is that they had set themselves out to achieve. So we deemed some of the targets and indicators as being not measurable and not well-defined, as they were quite open-ended. So they were allowed for us not to be able to know what they will be measuring themselves out against at the end of the financial year. With regard to the performance report, you'll see EDD and ITAC there. So they experienced certain challenges with how accurately and reliably they reported. With ITAC, they don't have a system to accurately and completely, you know, collate and collect information for their inspections. So they go do the inspections. They actually go do it. You can see it. But the way in which they report those inspections, you don't know exactly how the number and how accurate those numbers are, because they've got, you know, all the inspectors have got registers. You don't know how many registers are out there. So you don't know exactly at any given point in time how many inspections they've actually done. Could it be more? Could it be less? How accurate is that number they are reporting on? But I know they are working on a system to try and do away with this, so that it will lock all the inspections. And if you do work around the system, at least you'll have a more accurate number in terms of the number of inspections they have conducted. So, Honorable Chairperson, with regard to the slide, remember what I said? Financial information, your state of compliance, and then your accuracy in terms of reporting of performance information. Key message here, lack of processes to sustain clean audit outcomes, because we deviate, we don't have systems to put in place for financial management and financial statement compilation, and we don't have systems in place to make sure that we accurately and reliably report in terms of performance information for the entities in red. Now, Chairperson, what key controls were not in play that resulted in those outcomes as discussed in the preceding slide? So you'll see with regard to the status of the key controls within the portfolio, overall, it's not looking too bad, Honorable Chairperson. It's just the two entities that we've been talking about, the EDD and the ITAC, with regard to financial statements. It is red there because, like we mentioned, had it not been for the audit process, they would have actually been qualified. I think the key message has also been given here in the sense that we said they must maintain a holistic view, make sure they're covering all the internal controls with regard to the status of controls, and not just focus on ones that where they know there are weaknesses and lose sight of other ones, because that could potentially result in new findings in the next year. The assurance providers, so basically the key role players within the portfolio, senior management assessed as providing some assurance because of the lack of internal controls in the financial statements and supply chain management processes with regard to EDD and I think it was ITAC. And then the accounting of officers and authorities there, again, EDD and ITAC are the ones where we've assessed them as only providing limit some assurance, not entirely to the level which they should be. I think the status of this assurance providers, overall, if we can just focus on those internal controls at senior management level and an accounting office authority level, we should see progress in the right direction. With regard to the third level, which is now where you are directly implicated, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, there is a portfolio committee. We've done our assessment. Our assessment was limited to, you know, the oversight role that you play with regard to the quarterly reporting processes, how well you engage the department. We are aware that the portfolio committee actually robustly engages the department with regard to their role in terms of economic growth and economic development. Fortunately for the current year, as a result of all your hard work, we've assessed you as providing assurance and given you a green. Honourable Chairperson, just a little bit more detail on slide 11 with regard to the quality of the performance plan. So I want us to focus, or I wanted us to, we've given this slide to give you a little bit more context with regard to the performance plan. So now you can see economic development, which program within the department there were specific issues with and what the issues are. So the red means there was a material finding that was reported. The green means there were no issues that the office, or no material issues that the office picked up through our audits. So economic development on both programs that we had selected there for auditing, we had challenges where we mentioned, like earlier on, the targets and indicators were not useful. I'll give you an example, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, with your indulgence. One KPI we had a particular challenge with, as an example, was KPI 5. It says support the development of the green economy and jobs through implementing the green economy. Now, if one listens to this, it says support the development of the green economy first and foremost. And it says and jobs through implementing of the green economy. Now, I've had the Green Economy Accord as well. I don't know how many members have seen the Green Economy Accord. It's quite a big document with about 12 outcomes. Now, in those 12 outcomes, the outcomes are quite clear, but it's a strategic document. Very high level, it tells you what we're trying to achieve, where we're working towards. But it's not clear in articulating what the individual role players must do. So from that point of view, we don't know what the department's role is in implementing the green economy. Mm-hmm. Now, when you go to the technical indicator description, the department actually says that they will only monitor and produce a report on how well it is being implemented. But even then, if you look at the individual KPIs, because the actual achievement there is noted as two initiatives, the initiatives which were reported, one of them was attending a fashion show where some economy green material were used, you know, like an environmentally friendly economy. So it's quite a far stretch to say to link it to developing or implementing, growing the green economy. We didn't really know what the department's role was in attending the fashion show. So from that point of view, we deemed the target not being measurable and useful in that regard. That was just as an example, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The rest of the portfolio, quite okay in terms of the performance information. It is just the ITAC where they experienced challenges with regard to how accurately they reported, but I think we've dealt with sufficient detail in the preceding slides with this issue. Now the financial management, Honorable Chairperson, on slide number 13. I think, Chairperson, the key message here we've already discussed as well on slide number 8, where we show you that from a compliance point of view, EDD, ITAC were the entities in the current year that had material adjustments on their financial statements under figure 1. But you see the trend has been those two entities over the course of the past 3 years, they've not had adequate systems to be able to produce accurate and complete and reliable financial statements for audit. They're always unqualified as a result of the audit process coming and auditing them unqualified. So on the right-hand side, figure 3, you'll see, had we not allowed for adjustments, you'll see EDD and ITAC would have been in the red. They would have been qualified, unfortunately. Honorable Chairperson, as far as the detail is concerned, on slide number 14 with regard to unauthorized, irregular, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we give you a slight high-level definition of the different types of expenditure. There's just one small error on the slide, Chairperson. You'll berate me at the later stage for this. With regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, actually in the current year there is an amount of 700,000 approximately for the Competition Tribunal, which has to do with some cell phone expenses where all executive members were supposed to have paid pay-as-you-earn on the allowance, but it wasn't recovered as a result of a system error, but for many years, so they went and did a calculation of that, and obviously the SARS acts are quite clear in saying that, you know, if it was the employer that was supposed to have picked it up and they didn't pick it up, the employer is responsible for paying that over. They've done the assessment to say the employees were not negligent, and they feel that the employer, the entity, will carry it. So that's about 700,000 that should be in there. And then with regard to irregular expenditure, which is just expenditure that was incurred not in in accordance with legislation, you'll see there's been a slight sort of decrease and then a slight increase again. But the biggest contributors there were just the Competition Commission with their 2 million for the deviation, and the Competition Tribunal also with another million there with regard to the deviations. So just the deviations and the conflict processes that needs to be sharpened up a little bit and tightened up to make sure that we deal with the irregular expenditure. On the next slide, Chairperson, just a high-level feedback in terms of the entities where they did follow up irregular expenditure. Over the course of the year, there's always been one entity that didn't follow up, but we've interrogated the rules, the reasons, and we've noticed that the reasons, we were happy with the reasons that they didn't follow up in the investigation, as no official was ultimately responsible. One was at the Competition Commission in 2014-15, and in 13-14, I think it was the Competition Tribunal, and also as well in the 15-16, the Tribunal as well. Honourable Chairperson, I know it's been a marathon session, but I'm coming towards the end of my presentation. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the last slide I want to talk to you about just basically sets forth the reasons why the portfolio has received some of the outcomes they have received in terms of root causes, the status of the commitments we have received from the Executive Authority, and then ultimately also, Chairperson, it wouldn't be a session for us if you also didn't give the Portfolio Committee some work as well. So the last part of this slide actually has some proposed recommendations of follow-up actions that we would like the Portfolio Committee to follow up on in order for you to also play or assist the portfolio in going towards clean administration. So if I can deal with the first part of the slide, the root causes, slow response by management and then inability or vacancies in instability and vacancies in key positions. Like we've mentioned, you'll see there the ITEC, EDD, and Competition Tribunal, they've had the same findings over the course of the 3 years with regard to material adjustments to financial statements. So management does develop action plans to rectify matters reported by the AG, but it's sometimes a little bit late, resulting in repeat findings in the subsequent years as well. So just maybe if we can get a little bit haste in implementing those action plans, and making sure that we follow up on them and maintaining that holistic view with regard to the status of our internal controls. And then instability, I mean, the DG position now at the department has been vacant for, I think, longer than a year now, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. We do acknowledge that there are people who are acting, capable people who are acting, but the challenge with the acting person is always, you know, they don't assume the full responsibilities. Because if I'm a DDG and I'm acting, if I don't get appointed, I must go back to being a DDG again, and if I was cracking the whip with my colleagues who are DDGs, I must go back now again. So we always find that challenge, and we're saying that's the situation, but we're saying that these are some of the reasons why people don't assume full responsibility when they're acting, although we acknowledge their contributions in those roles. Then senior management positions within the finance department at the EDD, I know the minister has mentioned that he is recruiting and he is working tirelessly to fill the positions, but he's not finding the people of right caliber. I think at some stage one has to sort of make a call. Are we headhunting or what are we doing? But ideally we would like to, you know, make sure that the positions get filled ASAP to be able to deal with this. At the Competition Tribunal and the ITEC, the vacancies there are at deputy commissioner level and then also at the tribunal members for the Competition Tribunal. Now, Chairperson, while from a finance point of view, these entities may be able to operate now, it poses significant operational challenges because sometimes the tribunal is not able to meet so that they can adjudicate and have a tribunal session over some of the cases they need to adjudicate. So it has a bigger strategic impact with regard to those vacancies, and I think the sooner we sort them out, the better for those two entities. The status of commitment from the executive. So obviously when we also engage the minister, we ask him, Minister, what are you doing about these issues that we are highlighting to you? The minister gives us some commitments in terms of key actions that he's looking to implement to address these issues. So in the prior year, at least he started by making sure management does monthly financial statements, although they're not doing the full statement, because they should do the full statement. They're doing the primary statements only. They increased focus on trying to recruit in terms of human resource management and doing away with the compliance aspects which were there. And I think the department has actually done well to sort of minimize their irregular expenditure as well. So that's still in progress. The minister was successful in making sure that the internal audit is now fully functional at EDD. We engage regularly with them and they are providing their assurance in that regard. In the current year, the minister just committed to compiling an action plan to also address the new matters which have been reported. Honourable Chairperson, with your indulgence, I would also like to take 5 minutes and be naughty. I know I'm overstaying my welcome, but I would like to take 5 minutes just quickly to talk about the last bullet there that's in the blue block with a new commitment. Honourable Chairperson, as part of our strategic objectives and evaluating from the Office of the AG, we look at what we call the sector outcomes, implementing a sector approach. So we look at the national department, we look at all the provincial economic development, and then we say, guys, are you guys working consistently as a sector to try and meet your mandate in terms of economic growth? What are you guys doing across the board that is consistent, that we can give feedback in terms of that consistent approach from that regard? And the minister has committed, because we're currently conducting a feasibility study. We do acknowledge there are challenges, because Northwest is a mining town, so economic development there will focus on mining. KZN, the focus will be on agriculture. So obviously the economic development department's objectives there cannot be the same as the ones in the Northwest. But the minister is supporting us in doing that feasibility assessment to see if we can add value in that regard. Honourable Chairperson, in conclusion, on the right-hand side, some work for the portfolio committee, humbly so, without being prescriptive. We would like to request the committee to please ask management to provide the portfolio committee feedback on the implementation and progress of the action plans. How successful are they? How far are they? So when they come and they give quarterly reporting here, also ask them how far they are in addressing or implementing the action plan to address these issues. Make sure that they give the portfolio committee regular feedback on the status of key controls, and then also make sure that they give you feedback with regard to the progress of filling of those vacancies at the EDD, the Competition Tribunal, and at ITEC, and then also make sure that they are able to provide a list of transgressors to this portfolio committee on a quarterly basis when they meet. Honourable Chairperson, I know it's been a mouthful. I really appreciate your indulgence and your attention, but that's the presentation on the outcomes of the portfolio. We'll take questions, comments, or inputs at this stage.
No, thanks very much, AG. I think as a committee now, we are well armed. You really gave us a mouthful. Yeah. Can I open for deliberations and questions? Doctor.
Thanks, Chair. My question relates to a finding by the AG in the Competition Commission's report. We received an explanation yesterday when the Competition Commission briefed us, but I wanted the AG's perspective on it. I don't have the page at hand, but essentially it deals with a finding of non-compliance with legislation insofar as persons in service of the public entity had close family members, partners, and associates with potential private or business interest in contracts awarded in the public entity, having failed to disclose such interest. An explanation was given to us yesterday. I wondered whether you could brief us on the background and latest status of your investigations in that regard. Thanks.
Honourable Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. We want to appreciate the presentation. The gentleman indicated that he's a fast talker, but he talks fast, but he explains faster, you know. We're able to follow the presentation. We are aware that there are these recommendations that the AG is suggesting to the PC, our own action plan as to what we need to do to ensure that there is a change. That is appreciated. But on slide 9, on leadership, there are concerns that are being raised about the oversight responsibility, and also on issues of policies and procedures at that particular level. While we appreciate the recommendations that are made here by the AG, what is the opinion of the AG as to what needs to happen there at that particular level to make sure that the situation changes? Because if things don't improve over a lengthy period of time, your only opportunity to redress the situation is at the level of leadership oversight. Now I see that there is yellow and yellow and yellow there. There is a lot of concern there. As far as these two matters are concerned, what would be the possible opinion of the AG around that matter? Thank you.
Honorable Mansfield.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. It was vibrant and radical. It was so difficult for us elders to capture. But on page 9, I just need assistance there, especially on status of key controls. It says on the leadership, on the EDD, the effective HR management says good, but there are posts that are not filled. So I need to be taken to so that I can best understand that this green, what does it mean? Policies and procedures, okay, on EDD it says yellow, it's concerning, it makes sense, but others are, it says it's good, but we've got so many findings, and there are repeated findings on leadership, on issue of filling vacant posts, it's not happening. How good is that? And on the issue of audit action plans, it's the same, because they not stick to their commitments. There are no remedial actions. This findings, we dealt about them last year, 14-15. But we're still talking about them, and the remedial actions are not there. Issue of policy and procedures, the concern, especially on SCM. I mean, if they cannot comply, what else? And having this presentation after Competition Commission and ITEC, it's not fair to us, because there are so many questions that the ITEC and the CC has escaped yesterday. They've given us their opinions, but when you check today, you find something different. Now, my appeal is that we have the AG's presentation before any other, so that we are now for the department, we're ready, and we've got the clear opinion of the AG. But us having the presentation today after ITEC and CC is not right, really. So thank you very much. Can I just get the clarity on that?
Over to you, AG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. No, I think apologies if it was difficult to follow, but I tried to make it as simple as possible. Chair, if I can maybe also start from the back. Unfortunately, the timing, we get invited, but normally the process is that the AG briefs first and then the entities or the departments come afterwards. So maybe that's something that the Portfolio Committee can look at in terms of their schedule. With regard to the action plans and some of the repeat findings, you see, ma'am, I tend to concur with the sentiments you are sharing, but unfortunately, we don't want to double whip the entities. Because if you look at the way in which you've reported, we've already given them the red on the ability to produce the financial statements So at least there we're alluding to the fact that at least, you know, there's some challenges here. So the challenge that we normally have all, as well with regard to action plans is entities actually do go and they do develop the action plans. So when we sit in the audit, you can't give them a red or a yellow because they have developed that action plan, they have implemented it, although maybe sometimes late. So then, you know, it becomes a factual, you know, legal issue to say, you can't give me a red, I have the action plan, I have implemented it, although maybe a bit late, or whether it's effective or not effective. So from that point of view, we've given them the red on the areas where which were not functioning. And then as far as the yellow is concerned with regard to the oversight in the policies, well, actually likewise for the effective HR management as well. Because the discussions we were having with regard to HR management, last year HR was a focus area for the Office of the AG. It was reported on the face of the audit report. In the current year, it's not reported on the face of the audit report, but also the challenges the department has tried to fill some of those vacancies. So when the AG reports, we have got the materiality and significance framework. So I'll maybe just use an example. If we come, there are 10 positions, and 4 or 5 of them are vacant, it's 40 or 50%, we will escalate it because it's a big number in terms of the total structure. But if we come and maybe there's one or two of those positions vacant, say, yes, they're still vacant, but it's at least not a significant portion of your establishment, so then also it will not meet the significant, you know, significant enough for us to escalate to you. Maybe those positions are important from your management to make sure that, you know, those positions get filled. But from our point of view, at least we acknowledge that the department is trying to do something about it in that regard, and also with the acting people. The one with regard to the oversight responsibility, it's all yellow, Honourable Member, because, you know, when you have the outcomes as we have in the, some of the regressions that we've noted, leadership is responsible for making sure that you've got the people in place, you've got the policies approved, the processes in place, and then ultimately must also review and monitor. So we identified certain gaps with regard to the monitoring. So it's not that leadership is totally dysfunctional or problematic, because remember, yellow means it's concerning, but yellow also means that they are trying to put processes in place, they are work in progress, but they're not there yet where we can give them the green. So from that point of view, whilst management is working hard to put it in process in place, but they're not at the stage yet where they are green because of some of the issues where they just must maintain that holistic view to make sure they are covering all their bases. Then with regard to the policies and procedures at EDD, the policies and procedures speak directly with regard to the performance information. The performance information, the technical indicator description, and the policies and the SOPs, the standard operating procedures for performance information, we felt that that's one avenue where the department could actually utilize to give more effect or detail as to exactly what they want to do to make their plans more measurable. Because we acknowledge your strategic plan is a high-level document. It is that APP is a high-level document. You don't want to see a lot of detail. You want to see the key issues and the key goals that the department wants to achieve. Otherwise, it's going to be a lengthy document. But the department didn't even have approved SOPs in the current financial year, and hence it's only on the technical indicator description and the SOPs for performance information where they were found wanting in terms of policies and procedures. In terms of other policies and procedures, we did note the trend in the current past financial year where a number of them were actually approved and implemented in this regard, and hence it's only for EDD in the yellow. And then the other question with regard to the Competition Commission, the conflicts, I intentionally left that one last because we've had many deliberations with the commissioner himself. What transpired there, without divulging a lot of details, is treasury regulations are quite clear. If you have a conflict, or whether through, you know, a partner association or, you know, business interest, you must declare that. And the declaration must happen two ways. So first and foremost, if I'm an official or employee and I'm employed by an entity, I must declare all my interest. And then if I have a, let's say me and Mrs. Ramapela, you have got a business together, if she then comes and does business with the entity where I'm employed, she's also required to disclose that interest. But she's required to disclose that interest at each and every transaction where award that she's going to apply for, not just one. So every time she puts in an award, she must declare that interest. Now, there are direct interests, so we've got a company together, and I work as an official, and that company where we've got an interest applies for an award, and it also deals with indirect interest, where both of us have got a company there, but she also has another company, and that other company comes and then comes and applies for an award. But because we've got that interest in another company, they're also required to disclose it. So what has happened here was the indirect. The commissioner had a company with another person, And when the commissioner went back to the commission, he declared his interest, but the person when submitting his award didn't declare the interest. And now, if you look at the way Treasury regulation, I think it's 16-something-something that deals with the conflicts, it's quite clear that you must disclose each and every time because it wants to make way with, you know, this perception of favoritism or nepotism. So now currently it could be deemed that there was favoritism, nepotism, especially because there was a deviation. The commissioner himself approved the deviation in this regard because of the nature of the work that was engaged in. So there was no declaration on that particular award by both members in this regard because the commissioner had felt that he had submitted his resignation letters and he didn't follow up with Sub-C and Sub-C didn't submit it, but even the documents are unsigned. So there's no way for me as an auditor to take that information and say it's valid or not because it's not even signed off. So all I see on paper is that there's a connection of a company between the two people and this person was given an award with the Competition Commission. And in terms of the prudent approach of reporting, we are required to then report it. It's for the Commission to take it up further. The Commission must then proactively engage in processes to resign from that company and make sure that there's no connection because I can't prove a disassociation of the relationship. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Further questions?
This is just a follow-up, Chairperson. We would like to hear what the AG would say in this regard. You see, continually they do work, they assess the work of the departments and the entities, and they make certain recommendations that will assist the department and the entities to improve their performance. Strategically, this is their key function, to ensure that things are done properly, you know, resources are utilized effectively and so on. Now, I want to know if it does happen that for several years in succession, they make some recommendations that should bring about these changes. But the situation remains the same over that period. In terms of their own objectives, what is it that they can do except to continue making the same recommendations over and over again? Because I think the AG themselves also have a responsibility over and above to make sure that all the state resources are utilized effectively, you know, so that it's not a cat and mouse thing. So that they come this particular instance, then they give the recommendations and so on, but they know that when they come next year, possibly the situation will be the same. What is it that they can do differently to try and really help to bring about the required changes? I thank you, Chairman.
No, thanks. The one that was responded to, the effective HR management, as a layman, I just want to find out, if you don't have a DG for 3 years, do you qualify to get a green?
Thank you, Chair. Now, I was scared that it was going to come in that regard. But no, Chair, I think from our point of view, it's not just 1 year that the acting DG was, because we had a lady that was there who left about a year and a half ago. Yeah. So it's a year. So, Chair, remember our assessment is not just where a person is there. We assess the workflow, the what the person is doing, how well the person is still functioning in the position. You know, things are still getting done in that regard. And we also have to take into account the challenges as mentioned by the minister. We alluded to earlier, the minister did mention we are aware that he's recruiting, he's driving his recruitment processes, but if he's not able to find the right caliber person, I mean, we can also not enforce our view on the minister to make him make an appointment. So in that regard, he must also then be comfortable to probably appoint somebody who is able to work with. But we have mentioned that to the minister, and it is as part of our briefing here to the portfolio committee. We flagged it for the portfolio committee to take care of it, but we can't assess them negatively as a result of one vacancy. We look at it from an overall percentage point of view.
the one from Honorable Tiana.
Thank you, Chair. The one about the AG's intervention. Chair, I'm glad the Honorable Member asked the question. What the Office of the AG does, first there's an operational process that we do, and then there's this high-level process that we engage in. Now, at the operational level, we've identified that, you know, audit is a very retrospective process. So we come in the end of the financial year, we audit, but we tell you what has gone wrong, but it's already too late in the financial year, the audit, the financial year is gone. So as the Office of the AG, over the past couple of years, we've engaged in this process of what we call the key controls review. So on a quarterly basis, we go to all those entities at the end of the quarter, we do a high-level assessment of the status of the quarterly process, so we give them feedback aligned to almost in the slide there on the left-hand side, the graph on the left-hand side. So we'll give them an assessment, a couple of checklists that we conduct. It's not an audit, it's just a very high-level checklist that we do on the results of that quarter, and we give management that feedback. So that serves as an early warning tool for management. If there's a problem with your financial statements or your assets, that normally would be picked up through this process, and then management can at least during the year already start working on that as we give them that quarterly feedback. So in some instances, that has really borne some good fruits for us, but where some entities have latched onto it and actually even taken that whole process over themselves, where now they do it on a monthly basis. Some of them, obviously, a little bit less appetite in terms of taking it over and still left it to the perils, or some of them less mature in terms of the internal control environment. Another initiative that we've implemented as the Office of the AG is the interim review of our the annual performance plans. So the annual performance plan for 16-17, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, you would recall that the AG came and briefed you in March about the plan for 16-17. We reviewed that, we made recommendations so that can be implemented upfront before the plans are approved. So obviously, because we are auditing, we are required to provide an opinion on the outcomes. We can also not be too close to the process because we must remain independent and objective. Otherwise, we will be doing management's responsibilities. We'll be assuming management's responsibilities in terms of doing their day-to-day activities. But certainly, we do have some of those initiatives where on a quarterly basis, etc., we engage management regularly, identify pitfalls, make sure that we communicate. We have intensive processes in our office at a strategic level where we look at the, interrogate the E&Es, we interrogate the SONA, we interrogate the budget votes to make sure that we've identified key direction. We track key programs and projects in the departments and in the entities to make sure that we're able to provide and follow the money where it's going to and provide management with that early warning in terms of that. But unfortunately, you know, short of now actually going to the actual entity and doing the 1+2=3 accounting, day-to-day accounting, we will be then assuming management's responsibility.
Yeah, no, thanks. I'm just thinking, I heard you saying that there are people who are acting, they don't take or assume full responsibilities. Now, in this case, we have got a situation where senior management is not full in their positions, and they had to give us a grain for that. Just explain it to me. I want to get this thing clearly. Because if... to me, if the DG is not there, or the DDG, the Deputy Commissioner, surely things are not right there.
Yeah, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Chair is pushing me in the corner now. But Chair, I cannot express a view on a person's competency and capabilities. If, for example, Ms. Ramapela is here, she's acting like we mentioned earlier on, she's a senior manager, so you're probably going to engage with her for the next couple of months. So the same level of engagement that I'm doing, if she's able to do that, then by mere virtue of the position showing as acting on paper does not mean that the job is not getting done. And that's what we are staying away from. So we've assessed it because the job is there. All we are saying is we flagged it in the last slide, on slide number 17, I think it is, where we are saying, yeah, slide number 17, where we're saying there is this vacancy, please make sure that we fill it rather sooner than later. So it's just making sure that we follow the due processes. So we're not casting any aspersions on the acting people's capabilities. That would be wrong of us. So all we're saying is they've done their part and let them just fill the actual position.
No, thank you very much. Since there are no further questions or clarities, we'd like to thank you and also say that in the future we're going to arrange that we have the first before meeting entities, because we're robbed. If we hear you, when you're giving us the presentation, we're dearly robbed. Thank you very much. So we just adjourn for tea break.
Thank you.
Let's also welcome the faculty. And thank you really for, I know that you are quite tight. Every committee in Parliament really wants to share. But this is due to the type of work you're doing. I think you were set up for a particular reason, and therefore, because of the time and the period you are in as far as our fiscals are concerned, we really want to appreciate that you were able to come and brief us on this very important topic. I think the economic development is quite important, and for you having the global view of everything, and also having had an opportunity to guide or to brief the National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries on what you see or you think are best applications in as far as the formula, allocation formula is concerned, and why and what are the reasons why they should do so. But above everything else, it is important also to sensitize us as the portfolio committee on the reasons behind the issues that you will be briefing us on, especially in as far as they concern economic development in our country and elsewhere. I think we really appreciate the fact that you are able to come in, so that whatever decision we take and whatever recommendations we make, at least we do that from an informed position. You being here is quite appreciated, and I guess it's the case with other committees. So I'm not sure whether you're familiar with members here. No. Yes, I will do the honor of introducing all of them for you, and also our support staff, so that you are able to know who you're talking to. At the back there, we have Mr. Cele. Honorable Cele is the whip of the committee and also a member of the African National Congress. In front of him is Dr. Kado. He's representing the DA in the committee. And then in front of him is Mr. Tliani, representing the ANC, and also the management, sits in the management of the committee, including the lady next to her, who's Mem Matsimbi, also a member of the ANC and the management committee. My name is Matulara Coleman, the chair of the committee, and just next to me here is the secretary of the committee, Mr. Mbele. The lady next to you, there is our researcher, Ms. Mbelekani. And then at the end there behind you is my PA, Ms. Williams. Next to her is Nelly Chake, also the committee assistant. And then I think you know Nukane is the PLO for the deputy minister. Thank you very much. That's the team. May we hand over to the PMG. By the way, what's your name again?
It's Chrissy Limburg.
Chriselda?
Chrissy Limburg.
Okay. You heard for yourself. Okay. May we hand over to you for the presentation or the briefing on what's your take on the annual report of the department and whether they met your expectations? Because if they did, then our expectations will be met. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, and honourable members, and everyone else. I would just like to take this opportunity of thanking the committee for inviting us to make this briefing to the committee. My name is Khalib Daoud. There are other members of the delegation, but as you correctly pointed out, Chairperson, they are just running a bit late in one of the other committees and will be joining us in the next few minutes. Just moving on to the presentation itself, on slide 2, there we've got, we would like to bring to the committee's attention four important areas around which we'd like to speak about in this briefing today regarding economic development, as well as some of the analysis which we did on the department's annual report as well as its budget. Now, Chairperson, I'm not sure if members of this committee are aware of the role and function of the FFC, but just to briefly go through it for members' benefit, the Financial and Fiscal Commission is an independent, permanent and statutory institution that is established in terms of Section 220 of the Constitution and must function in terms of the Financial and Fiscal Commission Act. So it's a permanent body in terms of the Constitution, and we also have our own piece of legislation that we have to comply with. Now, the mandate of the Commission in terms of the Constitution is to make recommendations to Parliament, provincial legislatures, and any other organ of state determined by national legislation. And we focus primarily on the equitable division of nationally collected revenue among the three spheres and also any other financial and fiscal matter. So our main area of concern is the recommendations regarding the division of revenue, but we also focus on any other areas of fiscal importance that we deem will impact on the intergovernmental fiscal relations system. Now, Madam Chair, moving on to the next section, which is the economic development in context of the current economic outlook. We see there on slide number 6 that there's been a progressive slowdown in growth trajectory of the South African economy. I think we all are aware that South Africa is experiencing one of its greatest economic difficulties over the past 22 years. We have not yet reached the point where we are in a recession, but we are very close to it. Now, the dampened growth projections are driven by a combination of factors and events in both global and domestic economy. So it's not just factors in the domestic economy, there are also global headwinds that are impacting our growth. The low fragile growth below the NDP targets are substantially constrained government's ability to address the triple challenges, that is your unemployment, inequality, as well as poverty. We know that in terms of the National Development Plan, the target for growth was set at 5%, and currently we are much lower than that at the moment. Sluggish growth will see South Africa's external competitiveness lag behind those of its peers. So we already know that there are other competitors, especially close to our borders, such as Nigeria, who are starting to attract the attention of investors as a destination for investment because of its growth in its economy, as well as its size in terms of the overall economy of the overall African economy as well. Now, what are some of the main issues that we should be aware of around the economic outlook? Despite the improved growth performance in the second quarter of 2016, the domestic economy remains weak, and the South African Reserve Bank's projection for South Africa's growth in 2016 has been revised upwards from 0 to 0.4%. So, while it's been revised upwards, we know that there are certain fiscal as well as economic risks that could deduce that projection to go downwards. So we look forward to the FTPPS and Treasury's projection in terms of what is currently what their projection is going to be for 2016 going forward. Now, South Africa's weak economic outlook is a result of escalating external as well as internal headwinds. We all know about the implications of Brexit or the Britain's exit from the EU, and we know that the Britain is one of our major trading partners, and therefore its exit from the EU is going to impact our economy in terms of trade flows coming in and going out. There's been a marked slump in global commodity prices, subdued economic performance across major industrialized nations, as well as concerns regarding the growth trajectory of the Chinese economy. And we know that as part of the BRICS, that is Africa, China, Brazil, India, we have major trade flows with these economies. And if any one of these economies go through some kind of a decline in their growth prospects, our economy will be impacted, because it means we are then able to export less to these countries. So Africa has also experienced one of its worst droughts in 30 years, and there are increased uncertainty over the country's investment credit rating, as well as plans to reform laws governing investments in property and mineral exploration, existing supply-side constraints in power and bulk transport infrastructure have contributed to holding back South Africa's return to levels of economic activity enjoyed prior to the 2008 global financial crisis. So these are all constraints that are actually hampering economic growth. And unlike your external constraints where there's nothing that we can do about, the internal constraints is something that South Africa has control over, and therefore is something that South Africa can manage in terms of going forward. Now, moving on to the next slide, Madam Chair. The global economic outlook as impacted by the Brexit decision, as we have highlighted early on, and the immediate aftermath of the decision, financial markets experienced a high degree of volatility. Now, the downward revision of global growth forecasts are concerns over how this decision may influence the long-term investment outlook. Now, we all know that Brexit is going to have an impact, not only just on South Africa's economy, but globally as well. But the actual ramifications and implications must still be worked out. And I think it's something that South Africa need to focus on in terms of trying to work out what the actual financial implications are going to be for the economy. Now, following a slowdown earlier in the year, the Chinese economy has experienced stabilization and moderate upward trend in commodity prices, and the adverse impact on South Africa's export earnings and trade account deficit may be minimized. So although the China has gone through a decline, there seems to be signs of improvement in the economy, and this could impact on South Africa's export earnings. We know that we export a lot of raw materials to China, and if the economy declines, it means that our raw material sector or our mining sector may be negatively impacted by such a decline. Institutional investors have reduced exposure across developing and emerging economies' stock markets, and this is largely as a result of a declining confidence in long-term growth prospects of commodity-intensive export nations. So investors have realized that in terms of the long-term forecast, the commodity sector is likely to experience a slow long-term decline over the period. Also, this normalization of monetary policy in the United States. We know that the United States have gone through various monetary policy adjustments over the past years, and this impacts on our South Africa's economy as well as our exchange rate as well. The contagion effect from recent significant volatility in the Chinese equity markets is another key reason why institutional investors are reducing its exposure across developing as well as emerging economies. Chairperson, moving on to the impact of a recent shock to the South African economy, which is the recent drought that we've experienced. Now, already we're noticing the impact of the drought. There's been an average contraction of about 5% through the first three quarters of 2015, in contrast to average growth of 1.5% in normal years between 2013 and 2014. Now, many of the commercial farmers are being negatively impacted by the drought. And we all know that non-farming sectors account for 20% of the inputs from the agricultural sector. So if the agricultural sector is being impacted through the drought, the whole value chain is impacted, and therefore other sectors will also be affected in the economy. Now, South Africa is set to become a significant net importer of grains in 7 years, and it is estimated that 5 million tons of maize and 2 million tons of wheat will have to be imported between May 2016 as well as April 2017. There's also the rising imports are taking place against a backdrop of currency depreciation and rising global grain prices. So we know now that our rand to dollar as well as rand to euro and pound. The pound has declined after the Brexit exit. But when we look at the rand to dollar exchange rate over the past few years, we can see that there's been a steady escalation in the exchange rate, which means that whatever we import becomes much more expensive. Now, the significant costs of imported grains are being estimated at 11.5 billion. Plus, there are increased pressure on timeous and efficient delivery of imports due to constrained infrastructure capacity for agricultural bulk operations at transit. So not only are we paying much higher for our imports, but there are also infrastructure constraints which is impacting on timeous delivery of the imported grains to the economy. Now, Chairperson, moving on to the budget and programs for the Economic Development Department. And here, the methodology that we use is we don't just look at the 1 year. We basically have a 3-year backward forecast as well as a 3-year forecast just for the committee to have a much more holistic view of how the budget has been performing over a 7-year period. Now, what we have assessed after looking at the budget trends of the department is that it's been quite erratic over the period reviewed. So, for example, following a approximately 21% real increase in the department's budget for 2015-16, that is after taking inflation into account, the department experienced a real decline of 28.5% in its allocation for that 2016-17. And this is largely a result of cabinet-approved deductions due to vacancies between 2011-2012 as well as 2013-2014 as well as fiscal consolidation. So the significant decline in the department's budget is largely because the department has not been able to fill key vacancies in the department, but also at the same time there is a fiscal consolidation and a national reprioritizing that is taking place. And these declines in terms of personnel expenditure is taking place across all departments at the national level. Over the rest of the 2016 MTF period, allocations to the department will decline further, although there will be marginal declines of under 1%. So the declines will be as drastic as what it was in 2016-17, but there will still be real declines to the department over the remaining MTF period. However, there's a concern about the erratic trend of allocations, which affects the ability of the department to plan and execute those plans. So if the department has specific implementation plans in place, from the Commission's point of view, there is a concern that if your resource allocation is erratic, how are you going to adequately implement those plans and make sure that those plans are actually implemented appropriately? Now, moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, on the spending by economic classification. And here, what we do is we basically look at the same seven-year trend, but we focus on the specific line items that the department spent on. And what we notice is that transfers and subsidies is the largest item in the department's budget. And it's also the item projected to show positive, even though marginal, real annual average growth over the 2016 MTF period. And when you look at the allocation for transfers and subsidies, it's about five times bigger than the actual allocation for the department itself. So in terms of goods and services, there's been a consistent decline, and this relates to reduction in travel and subsistence over the period reviewed. And this is also in accordance with the cost containment measures that were identified by National Treasury. Compensation of employees is also projected to decline significantly over the 2016 MTF period. And here the real annual average decline is that of 7%. And we indicated early on that this is as a result of a cabinet decision that was taken, but also because of vacancies that have not been filled in the department. Now, moving on to the next slide, Madam Chairperson. Over half of the staff complement fall under the administration program. Proportion of staff under this program has increased from 54% in 2014-15 to 56% in 2016-17. So, in other words, compared to the other two programs, the big chunk of the operations of the department is taking place in the administration program. There's also been an increase in staff complement for Program 2, which increased from 23% to 26% in 2016. However, the opposite is true when we look at Program 3, where the proportion of staff under this program has declined from 22% in 2014-15 to 18% in 2016-17. So we can see that there's been a reprioritization of resource allocation within the department. From investment, competition and trade towards administration and growth path and social dialogues. Now moving on to the section on the entities that report to the Department of Economic Development. In total, there are four entities that that report to the department. And they receive financial transfers from the department, However, the IDC generates the bulk of funding that they require for investment purposes. Now, when we looked at the allocations and as well as the real growth that these entities receive from the department, we note that the IDC receives the largest allocation over the period. So even though they generate a big chunk of their own resources, they also receive the bulk of the transfers to the entity. However, what we notice is that there's been a consistent decline in the allocation to CIFA, and this can have a negative effect on the supportive role that this entity plays to the SMME sector. Also, the Competition Commission shows massive decline in allocation in 2016-17. However, there's a marginal recovery towards the end of 2016 MTF period. Now, the deteriorating growth outlook for this entity could impact negatively on its critical role of enforcing competition and boosting economic growth. So these public entities, they play specific or key roles within the economic sector. And what we are seeing from the MTF allocations are declines in some of these entities, and this may impact its function in terms of performing its role with respect to supporting economic growth. Now, Chairperson, moving on to the section on measuring the performance of the department as well as the entities. From our assessment, and this is by going through the annual report of the department, we note that the department has reported 100% achievement of its indicators. However, this is questionable in light of the AG assessment of performance information. What the AG has highlighted is that the reported performance information, they have determined that there's been material findings on its usefulness. So in other words, the performance indicators that the department specified were not specific, they could not be measured, and they were not well defined. And here we give an example. One of the examples that the department has in its annual report is drive implementation of SIP 5 of the National Infrastructure Plan. Now, the department reported a target of 4 and achieved 4, reported achievement of 4. Yet, in our assessment, there was no clarity about what the target is meant to measure. The reported performance information was not reliable when compared to the source information. So the AG also found that when we looked at the performance information of the department, they could not determine how those targets were actually assessed. In other words, there was no audit trail in terms of how those numbers were actually determined. So overall, Madam Chair, when we looked through the performance information of the department, we essentially came to the same conclusion. It was very difficult for us to be able to say that for certain this is exactly what the department does and this is the department's performance in terms of what it has set out to do. And this is largely because for oversight purposes, performance indicators have to be formulated against the National Treasury's criteria of being smart. And if they are not smart, one doesn't know what the performance is that is being measured, and also whether that performance have actually been achieved or not. Madam Chair, moving on to the next section where we look at the performance of the entities. And what we observe from the spending trends in the annual report of the department is that although the department reported significant overspending of transfers by public entities under his budget. There is no explanation of the variances. So, for example, we see the Competition Commission overspent by 28% of the allocation that they received. Competition Tribunal overspent by 84%. And the International Trade and Administrative Commission of South Africa overspent by 4%. So despite the fact that they have overspent, there is no clear explanation of what the reasons are for this overspending. But what is also unclear is whether the overspending was compensated by any old income from the budgets of the entities or whether further transfers were made by the department. So when we looked at the overspending that took place, we are not sure whether the overspending was funded by the entities themselves or whether the department actually transferred additional allocations to these entities to cover the overspending that took place. So in conclusion, Madam Chair, within the constraints of the current economic environment, the 2016 medium-term budget should reiterate policies that will help prevent economic growth from falling too far and the country from entering into a debt trap. The following key aspects are noted with respect to the department. Number one, the department experiences erratic trade allocations. In other words, there are significant budgetary increases which are then followed by equally large declines. And this is a concern because it affects the ability of the department to plan and execute those plans. And then also the quality of the performance information in the annual report is poor and thus are not allowed any oversight over the department's performance. The department should engage with the stakeholders such as Treasury as well as DPME and request assistance on improving the department's indicators. So those are some of the key highlights that from our analysis, Madam Chair. And on that note, I'd like to hand over to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Daoud, I think for that presentation. I guess we, as usual, are much wiser with the information you just presented to us. Let's welcome other members of the FSC. We didn't get an explanation that we're in another committee. Let me reiterate what I said to Mr. Daoud earlier on, that we understand that you're under pressure on demand. We understand that everybody is in demand of you. The fact that you managed to be here, we really appreciate that. We are going to be continuing after this with the questions. Unfortunately, I've already introduced members, and as they raise their questions, they will have to start with their names so that you can also be familiar with their names. And then as you respond, also it will be important that you introduce yourselves too, so that we can know who is here with us. Let's see whether members would want to ask questions. Are there any questions on the decline?
Dr. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let us take this opportunity to appreciate the presentation of the FFC. It was very clear from the presentation. It's easy to follow the information as well. The question and concern that one would like to raise, Chairperson, and perhaps the FFC would like to share with us their view on this matter relates to the overspending by the entities, your Competition Commission, 28% more, Competition Tribunal 84% more, the ITEC is 4%. There is underspending there by the Industrial Development Corporation. The question is, did the FFC get an opportunity to engage the department on this overspending? Because according to the presentation that they've made now, they say there is no clear explanation as to how this overspending explained. But if there was interaction between the FFC and the EDD, perhaps something must have been said in a meeting, unless they have not been able to engage them in a meeting. If we could just get a feel of what the response was when this matters were raised, Comrade Chappers. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chair. My question was more one of a broader policy perspective. Given your mandate in the FFC, and given that you have oversight over other departments in the economic cluster, and given the current constraints of our economic environment, do you find that there is significant overlap between the mandates of various government departments in the economic cluster insofar as they are charged with economic growth and development? And if so, what would be your recommendations from a fiscal point of view as to ensure that there isn't such duplication? For example, we know that you know, many of the entities that now report to the Economic Development Department used to fall under trade and industry. Could a case be made for a merger, for example, of EDD and DTI from a cost containment point of view? Thanks.
Okay. Your view is solicited on this matter. Although this matter has been dealt with politically, I don't know if you will be able to do that. But it will be interesting also to hear from yourself. Just want to find out from yourself. I think this information is quite helpful, but I'm not sure what do you mean by the statement that EDD experienced erratic trend of allocation. Especially take into consideration that they are still a new, fairly new department. And obviously there was, in my own opinion, from 2010 to date, or up to the period under review, I wouldn't say there's a clear, you know, trend that perhaps you could really term it the way you term it. Maybe there's a reason behind it, but in that process of finding themselves, obviously they would want to, based on their vision, of course, would want to see themselves achieving or structured in a particular manner in order to be able to achieve, you know, the set objectives. But you not only critiquing that, but you're also critiquing the way they structure their targets, key performance targets. You're saying they lack in in definition, and they also are not quite measurable. My question would be then, and obviously we are basing this from the AG's report, and I'm not sure whether that is a historical or is something that is just for this period under review. I'm asking this because it could be something that we would want to also as a committee look at going forward, because we've been looking at it but not as, you know, concrete as this, you know, up to an extent that we could really issue such a statement. But perhaps you would reinforce the snippets that we've been getting and what we've been trying to tell the department so that we can be able to strengthen our case on that. I don't know whether it's a doubt or...
Thank you, Chair, and good morning or afternoon to honourable members. My name is Ramos Mabugu. I am at the head of the FFC delegation for today, and my apologies for coming late. We're briefing the Portfolio Committee on Social Development, and the time spilled over, and that's why we had to make arrangements for Mr. Dawood to come and assist. I've also come with Mrs. Sasha Peter behind me, who is our National Budget Analysis Unit Program Manager, and she works from our Cape Town offices, as well as Ms. Poppy Ndaka, who is a researcher in the National Budget Analysis Unit. In terms of the questions, the first question around overspending by the entities, I think the substantive question was whether we have engaged with the department on the overspending and what their views were. We haven't engaged with the department on this overspending. The way we interpreted the letter we received from yourselves was to raise with you issues to follow up with the department that you may require, ask them to give explanations to. And for us, the main issue there is whether the overspend was financed from the entities themselves or through the transfers from the department. But given the time constraints and also that we work on a request from an organ of state, parliament or provincial legislatures to request our services, we thought because you have requested our services as the Portfolio Committee, will come and share that with you. And should you require for us to do further consultation with the department, then we'll have a clear mandate to go to the department and have such discussion with them. The second question, that's always the tricky question on the... But it is a fair question, because it talks to whether we having issues of duplication and maybe issues of wastage. What I can say, broad brush, is there is nothing unique about how we are structured for economic growth as the executive in South Africa. One can find similar examples in other countries that are growing faster than ourselves, even with the present structure. So it's not so much how we are structured, but rather what is the mandate for economic growth, and is everyone pushing towards that? Economic growth by its nature, even when one tries to understand what determines economic growth and what drives economic growth, is driven by a multitude of factors. Many factors come into the, so that it's almost impossible for one department to say they are responsible for the outcome called economic growth. So there are a lot of departments that should fit into the process. A problem comes in when the departments are not talking to each other, and this is where the issue of coordination comes onto the scene. So for that, our thinking is Economic Development Department is well-placed to play that coordinating role for economic growth, irrespective of who are the people that, or who are the other functions that input into that. So EDD is well-placed to play that coordinating role and ensuring that everyone has a clear and defined mandate in what they're contributing to that outcome called economic growth. So with that, it will be amiss, almost bordering on being irresponsible on my part, if I were to make recommendations that are not informed by any research work or a question posed by the committee to say, should we merge DTI and EDD, because we simply haven't done that kind of research work in terms of how that configuration should look like. But if the committee feels it's an important aspect for economic growth, and again, from the mandate discussion Mr. Halim should have spoken about, there's nothing that stops the portfolio committee to say, can you look into this department and give us your independent assessment on whether they are collaborating in conflict or leading to the overall mandate. So on top of my head, I'll be misleading the portfolio committee if I pronounced on that arrangement. The questions about erratic budget, I'll ask Mr. Halib Dawood to come in.
Thank you for those questions. And also for raising some interesting issues as well. With respect to the erratic trend that we've observed, I agree, the department is relatively new. And so because it's not properly formalized, there are going to be variations in allocation because the department is still trying to find its feet. But what is concerning for us is how does the department plan in an environment where your allocations are increasing significantly and declining significantly? Because this impact on the way that you formulate your KPIs and also how you allocate your specific targets. So yes, we do expect there to be increases and declines, but the size of the increase and the size of the decline is quite significant. It's 25-26% and the decline is 23-24%, which is relatively significant, and it compromises the department's ability to actually plan properly in terms of its implementation. With respect to the assessment of the performance targets, what we did was we assessed the performance targets specifically for 2015-16, which is the department's annual report that they just tabled now in October. And what we did was we looked at the performance targets and indicators, and then we assessed them, and what we found was that what the findings that we came up with was exactly the same as the findings of the AG. So essentially what we found was that the performance indicators did not agree with the SMART principle. We couldn't, it was difficult to actually assess what exactly the department is responsible for, and the AG essentially came to the similar conclusion.
Thank you.
very much for the responses. Are there any follow-ups? I guess this is an indication that there are none. I guess we haven't actually gotten any response regarding the financing of the overspending. Which is something, of course, that you would get for either from the department or the entities themselves. Unfortunately, one of the entities has already passed its time with us, but I'm looking at those that are still coming. It will be important that we look into that. But I saw something here regarding the transfers, the IDC transfer to CIFA that are always that are delayed. Am I correct? And that has quite a detrimental effect on the performance of the SMMEs, or that could mean that SMMEs are not adequately funded due to that delay. Would you want to elaborate further on that?
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask my colleague Sasha just to help us out with that one.
Thank you, colleague. Yes, Chairperson, we came to the very same conclusion. Given that CIFA is a subsidiary of the IDC, delays in transfers will affect the mandate of the entity. Again, when we were doing our analysis in terms of what is driving this, like my colleague indicated, it was not very clear. So it is also one key avenue that needs to be explored as part of the committee's engagement with the department and the entity.
No, thanks. Obviously, CIFA has its own board. And they can really follow up on this matter. Am I correct? But what then would be the role that we need to play with regards to that? Is it a transactional matter, or is it one of the controls or control measures that perhaps the IDC is implementing, hence the delay in the transfers? What could be the reason, so that as we follow up, we are able also to check to get that. Because to be honest, we CIFA is no longer with us, and we might ask the IDC, and they will give us their own, you know, a response. But CIFA won't be here to also respond on their side from their own perspective. So we'll be hearing the one-sided, and I think you are in a better position than to can give us the exact response. Sasha, if you don't have it now, it's okay, and we'll ensure that perhaps you, in our follow-up meeting, because we definitely are going to be following up, or especially on requests regarding other areas of the government.
And the Honourable Chair, if memory serves me right, when we met in Soweto Hotel, probably 2 years ago, I think you mandated us to look at IDC and Competition Commission and present separate submissions. And we found that mandate to be extremely useful and could easily be made in this context, that as follow-up to this meeting, you ask us to look more closely at the relationship between SEFA and IDC and what the portfolio committee could do. I'm sure what will concern the portfolio committee is the outcome here, and the main issue is this having an impact on entrepreneurship and SMEs, which are a core outcome for the portfolio committee. And with reasonable time frames, such as the ones you have given us, before we can come back with some advice and recommendations for yourselves. I could follow up with the committee secretary and based on the ones we used last time, but I do recall from last time that you had your own pressures to get the relevant DRRR reports sorted, but I can look at the terms of reference of the two previous ones and send to the committee secretary and we can agree on what is doable.
Probably our main pressure would be the currency, medium-term processes, then afterwards would be the report. So if you can, just look at that and then maybe go on to it. It will be quite okay for us.
I think the issue with the SIP 5 was being used as an example of how the indicator could be better defined. So as currently defined, it doesn't give you information that we think is going to be useful for you to do oversight around such an important program as SIP 5. So, yes. So the issue we wanted to raise with the portfolio committee was, again, to request the department to refine that indicator even more so that it speaks to actual service delivery, things that have meaning to the portfolio committee so that when you do your oversight or site visits, you actually have things that you can tick off on and say, this was the situation last year, this is the situation this year, etc. And at the moment, as it is currently defined, it doesn't empower you to do that effectively.
Well, I know for the fact that IDA has needs also to be amended to cater for the accountability aspect of, especially to the digital age, because yes, it might have been emanated from us or been processed by us, but that doesn't mean definitely that it gets reported, the implementation thereof gets reported directly to us, because it's a multi-sectoral issue. So, but then I think mechanisms are still being worked to ensure that there is accountability, general accountability, or a formal way of accounting to us. Juxtapose those that the accountability to the executive. So unless that, or unless and until that is done, I think it will still remain a grey area. But I thought perhaps you had something in mind. But I agree with what you highlighting here, that for as long as those issues are not clear, it's still going to be area for the agricultural sector, because infrastructure, transport infrastructure and road infrastructure for the sector, that is the agricultural sector, really is a serious matter, not just that thing. Because others were told that they have to travel very long distances to haul agricultural products from one province to the other, mainly because they don't have means to transport such, either than through the road hauling. So let's look into that going forward, and I think that it helps members to then think of other creative ways of asking questions, of making the department and other or the cluster to account to us on this particular issue. In the absence of further questions, let me use this opportunity to thank, maybe I should use the leader of the delegation, Mr. Mabuku, for the presentation and the professional way of really presenting issues to us. Very simple and succinct for us to be able to understand and digest those issues. We really appreciate this, and I guess as members of Parliament, we are much wiser today with the information you just given us. Thank you very much. The rest of the issues will be communicated through to the secretary. Thank you, members, also for your attendance. The meeting is adjourned.